back, folks of America, and live from the G&D Show Studio. This is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Demon Hunter!
Yes, sir!
Yes, sir! Happy birthday, America!
Yay! Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey! Are you listening? Because they want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.com. The SYL Project! TheSYLProject.com. Be Cancer Fighters! Share your love today. TheSYLProject.com. Thanks, guys. And Paranormal A. Thanks, guys, for the support and being so cool. Yeah.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling the love, Sean.
You should be. Hey, Nathan, we celebrated our independence yesterday.
We did. What did you do to celebrate your independence, Sean?
Well, it was interesting. Every year here in Indianapolis, like most states, most cities, we do a big fireworks show downtown. So I had the kids and we were all psyched and they were going nuts, beating each other up because they were bored being in the house. And they decided that we should go back downtown to a place called Military Park where you could lay on the blanket. It's by the canal and all the war memorials. And we were going to go down there. Stacy started packing up the stuff, my wife, and we were going to go down there, bug spray and everything else. But, you know, I just didn't feel like dealing with the crowd, man, and the heat and the bugs.
You know, I have felt the same way for years. You remember I had that great little bungalow down on the lake when you came to visit me?
It was nice.
And it was nice, and they hold the fireworks right there. So I could sit on my front lawn. I could tell all the other people, get off my lawn. And I could sit there, and I had the whole lawn to myself to watch the fireworks.
Right.
But, now I live out in the woods, so I can't see the fireworks, and it's a pain in the butt, because if I go down there, the guy who owns the house now looks at me and says, get off my lawn. So I can't enjoy the fireworks.
That poor guy. You know, that place was, your old apartment was so tiny. I remember coming up there. It was cozy, but it was tiny. You remember that?
But you know what the funny thing is? That, for Connecticut, for tiny. What I was paying, and I was paying...
Oh, I know.
Utilities not included. I was paying $800 a month for that apartment. Right. And that was a huge apartment for $800 a month.
Yeah, it was. You had a big bedroom. Most of it was the bedroom.
Well, I actually turned the bedroom into the living room because it was the biggest room in the house.
Oh, did you? That was after...
Yeah, that's where you were staying, was in the loft. And my bedroom was downstairs, was really tiny.
Mm. So upstairs used to be the bedroom then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And I figured when people come to visit, I don't want us all cramming into one little room. Of course, nobody ever came to visit. You were like the only one who ever came to visit.
Whatever. You had chicks in and out of that place. Don't lie now. Don't try to church it up.
I was with Chrissy P. at the time.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You were with your future wife at the time. Yeah, but that place was cool, man. You had the boat jet skis right across the way there. You could watch people on the...
Oh, yeah. The playground, all the girls in bikinis. It was,
Yeah. Not the people in the bikinis. Anyway, happy late birthday, America. We love you. We support you to all our armed forces and people out there that provide safety and security every day for us to sleep under the sky of this free, beautiful nation of ours. Thank you so much.
Have you seen any of the cool stuff people are posting, though, about Independence Day?
No, I mean,
it was interesting stuff that would make our founding fathers roll over in their graves, because it would say like town fireworks, city park, no alcohol, no
freedom, huh?
No alcohol, no pets, no umbrella chairs, no tents, no this, no that, no lanterns, no open fires, no. It just went on, and you were just sitting there going, "Land of freedom."
You know, I was looking at that. No doubt, the free, as long as you don't drink beer. I was going to sneak it in anyway at Military Park, but yeah, like you said, last night we were going to go there, and thank God at the last minute I was like, "No, I don't want to go." There were shots last night. I would have had the kids there. Somebody start shooting.
Well, you know, they heard the fireworks, they got scared, they started shooting at them. What do you want?
Yeah, well, it's not like the old West days where they would shoot up in the air to celebrate. These were shots to kill people, you know. But thank God nobody was hurt. The cops came in and busted the idiot down to the ground. I'm sure somebody out there would be like, he should have fired a warning shot at the man shooting guns around children.
You never shoot a warning shot.
Right. Everybody knows that. Let them have a gun and somebody pointing a gun right at their head and say, no, no, don't kill the other guy. Just shoot him in the leg.
Well, warning shot one.
It's through the head.
If you shoot at somebody, they're going to shoot back at you. So a warning shot is a bad idea.
People are
second,
stupid.
If you shoot a warning shot, you take the chance of that shot ricocheting or bouncing or just going in the wrong direction and hitting somebody who's innocent.
Yeah, well, that's another story. People are unrealistic. They're goofy. They're goofy. I'm not saying all cops out there are amazing and beautiful citizens, because they're not. But, yeah, man, this is crazy. It's getting out of control, people. It's getting out of control. So, anyway, moving on. Demon Hunter!
Ghost Man!
We've done it again, my friend. We've done it again. You know what time
it is?
That was
a gasp of extreme excitement. Yeah.
Erotica.
That
was it. Erotica. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Tonight's guest!
Ah!
Oh, it's so exciting, man. I can't believe it. Tonight's guest, he's an American actor and writer that's brought thrills and chills to the silver screen. In 2013, he brought in a new era of Leatherheads with his classic role as the Chainsaw Massacre maniac himself, Leatherface. Huh?
What's Leatherface theme song? I mean, you know, Michael Myers has the Halloween theme song.
I don't think he has one. Just the sound of a chainsaw going through somebody's spine. Through somebody's spine. No, don't cut me in two. Anyway, tonight, Mr. Dan Yeager. Mr. Dan Yeager stops by, guys. The chainsaw comes here to the home of the Mystifying Oracle of Radio. Your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. Yeah, baby. 4th of July celebration continues with the chainsaw.
Indeed.
With the chainsaw, man. I'm excited. Who didn't grow up? Of course, Dan Yeager didn't play the original Chainsaw Massacre, but he is the new, latest and greatest face of Leatherface.
Of death.
Face of death. That's pretty hardcore stuff, man. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when it first came out, there was a huge outcry about,
and let's not forget, last week we had Mr. Paul Ray
on from the show. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff, remember?
He told us about how cool it was to show up on set and original members of the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre were there.
Yeah, remember when he said the original house, they burned it to the ground?
Yeah.
So I guess.
Well, they rebuilt it to burn it to the ground.
Oh, did they rebuild it? I forgot.
I think that's what he said. That's what I perceived from the way he was saying it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but because you wouldn't think they would burn down a classic. I wonder if Hollywood like bought that house, because there ain't nobody living in it, surely.
Well, they said they built it. They built it to burn it down. That's what they said.
They rebuilt it. I could have swore he said that's their original house, so I didn't think.
All right, folks, it's an argument again between Sean and I. Go back and listen to the show from last week.
Yes!
Mr. Paul Ray. Mm-hmm. Just go to our, not right now, of course, wait till after the show, but go back to the June 28th, 2015 show with Paul Ray of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D, or Texas Chainsaw 3D, and True Grit, and tell us which one of us is right. Did they build the house just to burn it down for this movie, or was it the classic house and they burned it down at the end? Let us know.
Let us know, guys. Get us on all our fans, all our listeners, and family. We call you family, Shadow Nation, because you are. All of them there on Twitter and our Facebook page. Make sure you get on there, guys. Get on to our Twitter. Join
the Twitter.
Yeah, and YouTube. Make sure to check us out. Finally got Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show in the URL, Nathan, for our YouTube.
Oh, yay!
It is no longer Paranormal Master 1. We finally hit the 9-year mark, and I think they're going to allow us to change our URL. So they did. It just popped up, said, would you like to change your URL now? And I'm like, yeah! Because I guess you have to get so many and be a member for so long, so many videos up, and then they, They let you change. So now, guys, if you put up Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show, not only does it bring up just a few of our archives, it brings up the page. And if you don't know, on YouTube, hit subscribe, guys. It's free. It's in the top red hand. It's a big red button that says subscribe. It's totally free. You guys can check it out there. Where else can they get us, Nate?
They can also find us at planetparanormal.com.
Oh, my God.
That's our hosting page for our archives. And, of course, Stitcher.
You're
Stitcher Smart Radio. iTunes. Check us out on iTunes. Comment, please. And tell us how wonderful we are. We really need the boost.
We do.
And, of course, we are posted through several other podcasting pages. You can find us all over. Just go into your little Google browser there and hit Ghostman and Demon Hunter Show, and we will show up.
We will, guys. And of course, we've been out of the scene from the conferences lately for the last couple years, really. Just life's been so hectic, and we're going to get back out there, guys. So if you have a conference in your town or city, go ahead and give us a call, and we'll see what we can do, Nate.
That's right. Hey, Sean, I'm on fire.
Why?
And we know it's not a demon this time.
Get some water. I would pee on you. That's how much I love you if you were on fire. You know how they always say, you wouldn't pee on that guy if he was... I would do that.
Well, I appreciate that, but I went riding today, Sean.
Yeah, on the motor scooter, right?
On the motorcycle, yes. Yeah. And I went out with my lovely brothers from the Widow's Sons. That's the Masonic Motorcycle Association, the Widow's Sons.
Uh-oh.
And we went out, and we went riding. And we rode all day. It was an all-day ride. It was like the days of yore when men would get up on their horses and ride out to find buried treasure or cattle or something. And we were going out to find food and beer.
And women.
Yes. And we went out and I thought, it's a beautiful day. I am not going to wear my armored jacket that I wear when I ride. It's too nice. And so I left it in the closet and I put some sunscreen on my arms and I headed out. Only to realize about halfway through the day that when you're sitting on a motorcycle with your hands up on the handlebars, your short sleeves slide up and expose about 3 to 4 extra inches of your arm, which are not covered with sunscreen. So now I am lobster red from about 4 inches below my shoulder to about 2 inches above my elbow.
Oh.
And, it's a fun color. It's, you know, it's a shame you folks can't see it on radio, but I'm in pain, Sean.
You better get some aloe vera. Tonight you're going to be looking like a chicken doing the chicken.
I came home. I used the old farmer trick. I took a wet washcloth and poured white vinegar on it and wiped myself down with that first.
You people.
And then I've been using aloe vera like every 30 minutes since then. But fun day though. Fun day. I did get some fun riding in. My bike is still outside. I haven't bring it inside yet. But definitely a day to go out on the bike. One thing I will say about motorcycle riding, Sean.
Yeah.
People who tell you they hop on the motorcycle to relax.
Yeah.
They got it wrong.
Why not? Why wouldn't you relax? You're open road. You're cruising. You're easy riding.
You cannot relax on a motorcycle because, one,
grandma will roll you over.
you gotta make sure that the people driving behind you and in front of you in the cage mobiles, their cars, are not going to run into you. You got to keep an eye out. We had one guy almost hit a deer, jumped right out in front of him today.
Jesus.
You know, all that fun stuff. It's not relaxing, but when you are on a motorcycle, you are focusing on so many of these other things.
Right.
That you can't think about anything else.
Okay.
So you don't get on a motorcycle to relax. You get on a motorcycle to forget.
Forget.
So it was a fun day. It was a fun day to go out for a ride.
Well, yeah, man. That's crazy, though. I remember when I had my motorcycle, and it was very short-lived. I remember I had just gotten to really learn how to ride a motorcycle. And that was one of the most intimidating things to me I've ever had, because I'd never set on a motorcycle. So all of a sudden I'm riding it in the middle of traffic, you know?
Oh yeah.
And I stopped to get gas. And I remember the little gray-haired old lady next to me, she was pumping gas, And I said, hi, how you doing? And she walked past me. She didn't, I don't think she seen me or heard me. And she finished filling up her tank, man. And I'll never forget, she smoked, burnt out of that gas station, pulled the whole nozzle off the fuel, off the fuel pump, baby. And she went around the corner. And when I was done, I started going that way. And she had hit a tree and just kept going. And I remember hearing my dad, she had sideswiped a tree. I remember hearing my dad's voice in the back of my head, you got to watch out for people around you. And I never forgot that. And then one time I hit a pothole and I thought I was going down. And it just wasn't worth it to keep it plated for me and everything, you know?
Yeah, I did go out on a ride a few weeks ago, and I was driving through Waterbury, Connecticut.
Okay. That sounds
familiar. Waterbury, Connecticut used to be where they used to mine all the brass. You know, all those beautiful little brass items you can buy in stores and stuff.
The
ones that say made in America. Mm-hmm. Not the ones that say, you know, made in Portugal or anything like that. The ones that say made in America.
There you go.
After all, it's Independence Day weekend. They were made in America.
America.
And America. And we, you know, that's where they did all the brass mining.
Right.
And I like the town. It has a great little mall. The roads are the worst to ride a motorcycle on in the state of Connecticut.
Why is that?
They're just constantly redoing them. Last year, Chrissy was driving underneath one of the overpasses, and they had retarred the overpass, and a giant blob of tar just fell off the overpass onto her windshield.
Nice.
I was riding through there the other day. I was doing about 55. Of course, I was only doing 55 because that's the speed limit, and I wouldn't do more than that.
Yeah.
People are laughing right now, but it's true. Sean has driven with me. Good. I drive like an 80-year-old man.
Charlie Brown called you on it. He said, oh, good grief.
I was driving through the down the main road, and I hit a bump doing about 55 in the dark and nearly got thrown right off the bike.
Okay. Ow.
And so it's stuff you got to be aware of. And so I say again, you do not get on a motorcycle to relax. You get on a motorcycle to forget.
To forget. I wanted to remind everybody, and as our listener base is growing, a lot of people want to know, you know, they say, hey, man, you guys are great. You're funny. Thanks for doing the show. But what kind of show are you? We're still getting those questions. People want to know, are you guys a, even Paulie came on last week, Mr. Ray, and he said, I seen one of his Twitter statements, Twitcher. You got me doing it now.
Tweeter!
He said, this is a hot popping show for horror film buffs with some comedy for the dark side of things. And, you know, guys, we cover it all. We started out just doing paranormal because that's our passion. Aliens, UFOs, demons, you name it. And then me and Nathan was talking one day, and we said, hey, man, we like horror movies, too. So we started branching off to all things paranormal. Para means beyond. So, you know, the horror genre and paranormal. If it's spooky.
From supernatural to superstars.
Yeah.
The Ghostman and Demon Hunter show covers it all.
I always say from Hollywood to the grave, the Mystifying Oracle Radio G&D show. But a lot of people don't know what we do, but that's it, guys. 1 week we could have an alien abductee on. Next week we have Linda Blair from The Exorcist. Who knows? Haven't got her yet, but you know.
No. We should get her, though. We should ask.
We should.
Say, Linda, we love you. Come on. We won't make pea soup jokes. We promise.
Yeah, we won't. Yeah, we will. Anyway, hey, I was looking up, because you brought this up, guys, the Hewitt house. Because if you remember, the family's name that raised the Chainsaw Massacre guy was the Hewitts.
Ah.
Yeah, and they found him in a trash can. I remember that in the movie The Origins or the beginning of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And they raised him, the Hewitt. And this article here says the Hewitt House Chainsaw Massacre location in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Says the hauntingly beautiful 6,000 square foot Southern Plantation house used in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies 2003 and 2006. The six bedroom house was built in Austin in the 1850s, Nathan. Yeah. Then moved by train in the 1930s and rebuilt brick by brick where it now sits. Thanks to the rural location of the home and its natural eerie look, the house was a shoo-in for the 2003 Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, and it ended up playing the part of Leatherface's abode.
Yeah.
This film, like the 1974 original, as well as Psycho, was inspired by Wisconsin serial killer Ed Gein. Remember Gein?
Gain?
Skinned human bodies and made up furniture out of them. But he acted alone and did not use a chainsaw. Most of his victims were already dead, and he only personally murdered two people. The film's opening claims the events are factual, and use of the false document technique. Filming of the first film was from July 15th, 1973 to August 1473. There you go.
Well, see, that's like one of my favorite movies, Sean, is a little comedy called The Big Year. And at the opening of that, it says that this is a true story. Only the facts have been changed.
Yeah. It's all true, but the facts. Anyway, apparently, it says why the house looks pretty awesome. Visitors should be aware that it is on private property. Apparently, you can visit the building from the road. The owners of the house are not friendly to trespassers. Of course not. It's the Hewitt family. They kill people.
If you sneak in and you hear chainsaws, run!
Yeah. You would think some of our listeners of the show would really be big Texas Chainsaw fans, because if you remember, I forget which one it was, Ernie, the one that plays, who's the drill instructor from the Marines? He always plays a great one, like in Full Metal Jacket.
Oh.
What do they call him? You know his name. Anyway, I thought it was Ernie something, but he was the father in that, Mr. Hewitt, and he killed a sheriff and stole his outfit, and he would pull people over on the side of the road and take them into custody, and then they'd let the Texas Chainsaw Man have at him.
Ooh.
That's what it was, man. That's what happened. Anyway, yesterday, did you get any fireworks? I never finished telling you. I went out and spent about $115 yesterday on fireworks for the kids because we stayed home.
Well, yeah, Chrissy and I went out and bought a few. There's some pictures of me on Facebook holding them in my hands as they went off. Kids, don't try this at home. Yeah,
very safe.
Yeah, I don't always follow the rules. I'm a rule breaker, man. Yeah. A risk taker. That's me.
Well, you're now the leader of the motorcycle gang. They call you the burnt pit rider because your pits are burnt. That's going to really hurt.
My riding name, my road name is Bug. Thank you very much.
Is it really? You have a nickname.
I do.
Oh, wow. I didn't know we had nicknames in the gangs. That's cool.
I am Bug, which is real fun now that I'm an exterminator.
Yeah.
So it's...
Bug. Is that new name or was that before?
Well, you know, that was also my nickname when I was on the fire department.
Okay. Did they create it or what nickname?
Well, no. One day I was sitting around with them and I said, just never call me Nat. I hate Nat because it sounds like a bug.
Oh,
and the next thing I know, my nickname's Bug.
Bug.
R. Lee Ermey.
There you go. Ermey or Ernie?
It looks like an M. Ermey. E-R-M-E-Y.
I guess you'd be right. I could have swore it was Ernie. Oh, well. At least I was close, right?
You were close. You
anyway,
get points for trying. Not!
Nathan, what'd you say? What kind of week is this? Yeah, baby. That time of year again. What is
That's right, folks.
Yeah.
Look down when you're in the bathtub because there might be a fin coming up for you right then, right there. It could be Shark Week.
It's Shark Week. Dad, what are you doing? It's Shark Week.
Shark Week. Ghostman and Demon Hunter is just like Shark Week, but without the sharks.
And it never fails. I planned a Florida trip. I leave on Wednesday this week, and Shark Week starts always the week I go, it seems like. I don't plan that. It just happens.
But, and have you noticed they changed the week for Shark Week like every year? Wasn't last week year it was in August?
Do they change it every year? I didn't know.
I think so. I swear it was in August last year.
Yeah, it might have been. I don't know. I don't think they changed it. I think that's it. It's like tradition.
And, you know, it is Shark Week, considering what's been going on down in the Carolinas, Sean.
Oh, my God. What's going on, man? People have been getting pounded by sharks.
Pounded by sharks. They closing the beaches.
What's going on here?
Shark spotters. It's like watching Jaws on the news.
I know it. They show pictures of girls on the beach with their legs hanging off and all that. That's crazy, man. I never expected that to happen. But hey, what are you gonna do? Hey, I was buying fireworks yesterday. Of course, I had to get the bottle rockets, right?
Oh yes,
classic bottle rockets. And then I got some little things for the kids, sparklers and stuff like that. And I got this one. It's a smaller size rocket, and I paid like $6 for it. And it was the best one. I saved it to the last, and I lit it. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's a little skinny shaft, and it's got a tip on it, and the it looks like a rocket.
It's the Sean Burris rocket.
That's right.
Skinny with a tip.
That's right. I'm a grower, not a shower, folks. Anyway, what? No laughter? No nothing?
Nothing. Okay. You get nothing, and you'll like it.
There's the bell for me. Anyway, so I went in there, and we got that, and man, we lit that off, and the whole sky lit up green. It was the biggest firework I've ever purchased. But while I was in there buying the fireworks, I seen the lanterns, Japanese lanterns.
Oh, they're nice.
Yeah, they're, you know, the people, you can buy them, and apparently they, once you light them, and they go up in the air, right?
Yes.
And a lot of the UFO reports coming in, the government is now saying it could be these lanterns. Remember hearing this in the stories we've been covering, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and we had the, from the Britain's Ministry of Defense, Nick Pope on a few months back. And I was reading that. It just came out this week. It was from Disclosed TV. Thanks, guys. All British X-Files on UFOs to be released by March 2016, it says. But they have not. It's been delayed, but they expect it out in late August. Yeah. And this comes from, I'm sorry. It's, yeah, they're saying it's going to be delayed in late August, but it still could be March 2016. This is speculation. Anyway, July 3rd, Nathan, 2015. Apparently they were talking. It says top secret files dubbed the British X-Files, which UFO hunters believe could prove extraterrestrials have visited the UK. They're to be released by the Ministry of Defense, the MOD. Wonder why Nick didn't tell us about that. Maybe he did.
Did he mention that? He might have mentioned that. He mentioned a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he went over quite a bit. It was hard to keep up. Anyway, UFO researchers and a House of Lords peer have campaigned for the release of 18 files about sightings that took place in the UK more than 30 years ago. The government originally planned to declassify the files at the end of 2013, but the release was stalled due to additional processing requirements. Yeah, that was prompting speculation, of course, about a possible cover-up. Yeah, after Lord Black of Brentwood pressed the matter in Parliament, the MOD says the files will be released to the National Archives by March 2016. There you go. That's it. It's going to be a big one. Everybody's going to be standing there going, what's going on here? We're ready for the truth.
I'm ready. I'm ready. You ready, Sean? We'll cover it on the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. Give us the truth.
We will. We'll go. We'll have to find out who's at the bottom. Probably get Nick back on for that week. I don't know. He's got to be going nuts from his old stomping grounds, the UK. It says some of the investigators apparently are claiming the classified government files will shed light on the reported sightings of the unexplained lights in Rendlesham Forest in 1980. Remember this one?
No.
Yeah, you do, because when Nick was on our show, he had breaking news first on our show.
Oh, okay, yes. Yes, I do.
The two U.S. military that were stationed there had found that craft, that downed craft, and one of them now, from 1980 when it happened till now, he had came up with a form of, I forget what it was, it just said health issues, heart problems, I guess, and they said it was directly related to the radiation they were exposed to, in which I guess, you know, at the time they took radiation samples from that area where the downed craft was that they said was silver and in color, and I think it was cigar shaped, but it had all these weird markings on it and stuff like that. But the government actually went ahead and paid up.
Oh.
And that was a big thing, because by them paying up, they're kind of accepting what happened.
They accept that something happened.
Yes, something happened. That's a big one, though, right? That's a score for the UFO community, the ufology community.
I'm feeling very ufal.
I don't know. They said it also might clarify some things, set the record straight on some things in 1947 Roswell, of course. UFO.
I doubt any truth will ever come out about Roswell, Sean.
I don't know. We'll see March 20th.
Either the truth has already come out about Roswell, or it's never coming out.
You think so?
I believe so.
Well, they say they tell us the truth and half-truths, kind of. Remember that? Said the government gives us little bits and pieces, but they make it so absurd, and they call everybody crazy that comes forth with, you know, because think about it. Everybody that reports something has to be a trailer park dwelling hillbilly. That's pretty much how they paint it. Am I wrong? Say I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong. Well, that's good. So what else is going on?
You told me to say it.
Yeah, I did. You hate the ufology community. Guys, Nathan's against you. The Red Pit Rider. he wants to hold secrets from the U.S., from the world public. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm all about secrets.
Yeah.
And without secrets, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show would not exist because what would we talk about?
I don't know. Secrets. More secrets.
There you go.
Anyway, so what else you got? You got anything hot to do there?
You know, I was checking out some interesting stuff, Sean, because I had read a report this week that Connecticut was the fourth drunkest state on 4th of July weekend.
Really? Connecticut?
Connecticut. Now, some of my friends say this is because all the New Yorkers come up into Connecticut for the 4th of July holiday weekend.
Right.
I can see it. We do a lot of drinking here in Connecticut. I think number one was West Virginia.
Okay.
I don't remember what the rest of them are. But so I decided to look up and find some information about the 10 drunkest states in the state of Connecticut.
I would have thought more like Texas. Everything's bigger.
Everybody thinks it's
given
Texas,
alcoholism.
But, not so much. I thought Alaska maybe.
I'm ready.
There's nothing to do up there but drink.
Right, and it keeps you warm.
Number 10. Yeah. Rolls in at New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
Beer consumption of over 1,860 gallons.
Wow.
Alcohol consumption total of 4,680 gallons.
Oh, my God.
Hot dog.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen.
That's the biggest state for drinking.
Mm.
Washington, D.C., not really a state, but hey, we'll give them, but look at what they have to deal with down there.
Yeah, they can't get that stuff.
They deserve
right?
it. Yeah. 3,870 gallons of alcohol a year.
Okay.
That's a big tub.
Yeah.
We're counting down here, folks, not up.
Yeah.
Third drunkest state, Delaware.
Delaware. Now that's that's out the way where patriotism started there.
Yeah,
you know,
3,600 gallons of alcohol a year.
Oh my God, dude!
Per capita.
I'm proud of you guys out there. Keep it up. I am.
North Dakota.
Yeah.
You know, it's right north of South Dakota.
Yeah.
3,370 gallons.
Okay.
They're big beer drinkers there.
Right. You know.
They kind of lose the points on wine.
Okay.
Nevada.
Okay.
Well, you do have all the casinos out there, so 3,310 gallons alcohol, Sean.
Oh my God! How many?
3,310.
Okay.
Montana.
Ooh, that's a lot of drinking. That's probably our fan, our listener, our family, Jill. Jill's out there.
Yeah.
She probably does a lot of Hooters drinking. She does. She goes out to Hooters every day, so.
She keeps inviting us out there, and we never have the chance.
Yeah, I know.
Montana, Sean, 3,070 gallons of alcohol.
Oh, my goodness.
There's not that many people in Montana. What, are the horses drinking?
They must be.
And come on.
Come on, horses.
Wisconsin.
Yes.
3,010 gallons.
Oh, my God.
You're slacking, Wisconsin.
Yeah, they need to pick back up.
The horses in Montana are being... Yeah.
I'm Mr. Ed.
Mr. Ed. We knew Ed was drunk.
Vermont, Sean, 3,000 gallons of alcohol per capita.
Nice, nice.
There you go.
What about the rest of the world?
Well, the rest of the world is drinking because they have to put up with America. Colorado, 2,810 gallons. And the loser, the 10th. Well, I guess the rest of us are losers because we haven't drank enough to keep up. But the 10th state is Idaho.
Oh, wow. Idaho, the potato people.
The potato people. They actually beat a lot of them on wine. They drink 1,080 gallons of wine a year, only 960 gallons of beer, a total of 2,810 gallons per capita of
a lot of fancies out
alcohol.
There.
I guess so.
I would have thought Connecticut would have more winos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
fancy.
Give us 4th of July and we'll beat y'all.
See? With winos. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Nathan, you know what time it is now?
Would it have something to do with what's in the news?
It would! G&D show in the news. It's always fresh. It's always exciting. It's strange, weird, and goofy. And it's straight off the G&D show vault. And it starts right
now.
Hot dog. What's the rules on the G&D drinking game or news?
Well, that's right, folks. This is G&D in the news. That means weird news that Sean and I pick right out of the papers.
We do.
We pick them because we like the titles. That means we haven't read the stories yet. So we are going to make a lot of mistakes. And every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's the D&D drinking game. Of course, if you're driving your car while listening to this show or planning to do anything important this evening, like tell your sweetheart you love her and you don't want to say the wrong name, please listen responsibly.
Yeah, and when you hear the bell, guys, D&D show drink bell, remember, take a drink.
That's right.
That's how we try to guide you through it. Anyway, Nathan, I'm all keyed up here. What do you say I lead us off?
Why don't you lead us off? There must be a story you want to make sure I don't take.
No, you're always raping my stories. Mystery of Loch Ness UFO photo deepens. You heard this one?
Okay, I'll change my story. Go ahead.
Oh, wow. That wasn't your story. Anyway, guys, this comes out July 1st, 2015, is where this comes from. Our good friends at the Huff Post. Right? Weird news. Huffington Post. Anyway, guys.
The Huff Post.
They report, we recently presented a story of how tourists visiting Scotland's famous Loch Ness came away from their vacation with a curious photo that became an internet sensation. I haven't heard about it. Let's read on. When Alan Betts and his wife, Anna, first looked at their holiday pictures after returning to their York, UK home, they noticed something odd in the following image that had been taken by Anne's mother. And of course, guys, as you can see, it's just something in the sky. When the Betts, when you look it up, you can see. When the Betts zoomed in on the picture and saw something weird in the sky above the water, they released it to the media, hoping someone would determine the true identity of the possible UFO. Someone did come forth, claiming to know exactly what the photo shows. It's almost certainly just the reflection of light inside the room, doubled up by dual plane window, according to Mick West, a retired video game programmer who now runs Metabunk.org, or Metabunk, one of the two, guys. Drink up, just in case, drink up, guys. An online site dedicated to the art and pastime of honest, polite, scientific investigating and debunking. Ah!
Yeah.
Debunkers always ruining everything. Anyway, Betts confirmed to the Huffington Post that various pictures West used from a promotional video seen below show the cottage her family stayed in while on vacation. But can pictures culled from a real estate video be the best source of an investigation that requires very precise image analysis?
I don't know, can it?
That's the question posed to you, Shadow Nation. I would be very interested if West could go there and try to replicate the picture. Betts suggests, I'm also very skeptical about his statement of one lamp reflecting the same reflection twice in a line with one another because of a double glazed window. And we most certainly didn't stage it. I can assure you of that. In his article, West goes to great lengths to try and prove that Betts' collective memory of how the photo came to be taken is an error. Yeah.
An error.
West shows many images and attempts to triangulate a variety of angles and ways in which the UFO photo could have only been taken indoors. And that the alleged UFO in their photo was simply the double reflection of a reading light. There you go, guys.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. Looks pretty cool. I bet they feel stupid if, in fact, that's what that was. I don't know. It could be. It kind of shows like an arm over top and then like a flat type light. Looks like a UFO.
It was the aliens returning for the Loch Ness Monster, Sean.
It could be. It looks like a UFO saucer classic picture with like an antenna on top. It looks like double right next to each other. So I don't
know. There you go. Hey, Sean, mayflies swarms are so thick in this town, they are causing car accidents.
Mayflies in July?
Mayflies in July. Hey, I saw a mayfly today.
Oh, man.
I stopped on the road to get a drink. Giant mayfly right there. Everybody was freaked out.
Oh, no.
So this is in Wrightsville, PA, Sean.
That's just right, baby.
That's just right.
Right.
A bridge has closed for the second straight night because swarms of mayflies are so thick they cause accidents, authorities say.
Oh, my God.
Wrightsville fire officials said that Route 462 bridge over the Saskatchewan,
drink up, guys.
Have a drink, folks. River between Columbia and Wrightsville closed at about 10 p.m. on Sunday.
Okay.
This story, of course, coming to us from the Huffington Post and AP News. And I guess it's from last week, the 15th. So, Chief Chad Livensburg,
okay.
I said that right, said a vehicle slowing because of the cloud of insects led to a crash.
Oh.
Though he didn't believe anyone was seriously hurt, the bridge reopened overnight.
Okay.
So, I guess it only closes during the swarms.
Yeah.
This kind of reminds me of all those old classic 1970s and early 80s bug movies.
Right.
You know, Sean?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Mothra.
Yeah. Well, you know, like frogs and the swarm and squirm and all those fun stuff. The bridge was also shut down Saturday night. After three motorcycle crashes attributed to the flies.
Was it a gang?
You ever been bit by a mayfly, Sean? They hurt.
Well, I got bit by a dragonfly.
Well, mayflies are like 2 inches long, and they have pinchers on the end.
Oh, my God.
The Livensburger says... I have a drink, folks. I'm probably saying that
wrong. Oh, my God. Drink it.
Says the department was dispatched to deal with the one car crash... and saw two more crashes while on the scene. All the victims were treated at the scene. It was just crazy, Livensburger told the York Dispatch on Sunday afternoon.
I think you're saying drink, guys.
It was 1 to 2 inches thick of mayflies on the road.
No.
So,
need snow tires for that.
Mayflies are attracted to light. And on the road, and the bridges have surface and side lights. When cars hit them, the female's eggs release liquid that makes the road slick.
Oh my God, man. You know,
icky, icky, icky.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, so I agree, Charlie. Was that it? That's awesome.
That's the news about the mayflies.
There's mayflies. Hey, I got another one. Tensions rise in Bolivia, apparently, as indigenous drink up anyway, guys. Witches prepare for the Pope's visit. Witches
really?
Waiting for the Pope's. This comes out of Reuters, guys. Special thanks to them for the story. El Alto Bolivia. This is from July 4th, guys. At a witch's market. In the Bolivian city of El Alto, dried llama fetuses said to bring good fortune hang outside tin shack stalls, while healers read the future in coca leaves and call on ancient spirits to cure ills.
Okay.
Ills like illnesses, not ills like snake ills. But anyway, when Pope Francis visits Bolivia next week, he will discover a nation that cherishes animal sacrifices and pagan worship. And where relations between indigenous communities, drink guys, I slipped up on that one, and the Roman Catholic Church have been strained. The country's first indigenous president, Evo Morales, has frequently clashed with the church. So why is the Pope going there?
Well, he's trying to increase good relations.
Sounds dangerous. I hope he comes with good intentions and not with the same thinking as in times past, said Luisa Quispe, drink guys. Oh my God, drink twice. She's 60 years old, a self-described witch in El Alto, a satellite city perched above the capital, La Paz. La Paz, drink just in case, guys. I'm botching it tonight. Anyway, we want respect for our culture. Francis sets out on Sunday for Ecuador, Bolivia, and Paraguay, three of South America's smallest and most impoverished nations, taking with him a message of solidarity for the downtrodden. There you go.
Well, that's a good message.
Yeah, I think so. He's coming.
I think if they're expecting this Pope to come with the same old stories as the popes in the past, they're in for a surprise, Sean.
Yeah, he's the rock and roll Pope, man.
He really is.
Yeah, he's letting up. He's saying gay marriage.
Do you know he said
acceptable.
That there's no hell?
Did he really?
He did.
Man, that really had to put a sphinx on the old Catholic Church there. They're like, what? What have we been doing?
I might be taking that out of context. So, folks, if you believe in hell, I'm not going against you there. But I believe I did read an article where the Pope claimed there was no hell.
Oh, wow.
But hey, Sean, we've been talking a lot about Texas tonight.
Yes.
Remember the Alamo.
Where the stars are bright late at night.
Yes. And it has an official cat.
Really?
The Alamo has a new official cat.
I'm ready for this. Is it a haunted cat? Is it like a ghost cat?
It's not a haunted cat. It's the Texas General Land Office on Thursday announced that a calico kitty, and get ready to drink here, folks,
has
the formal title of Miss Isabel Francisca Vermedia de Velro.
Drink! Three times, drink!
But she goes by Bella.
Okay.
The General Land Office oversees the state-owned landmark in San Antonio. Bella welcomes visitors and prowls for rodents.
Okay.
The previous Alamo cat, who went by Cece for Mistress Clara Carmark,
I like her pizza.
Died last summer.
Oh.
Bella was found roaming the grounds of the... Oh, Alamo? Gosh, I'm going to insult Texans here. I'm sorry, folks. Carrizo Le Famia in Goldreed. An employee brought her to the Alamo.
Okay.
Bella wears a tag that says, I belong to the Alamo.
Hoorah.
She has been seen on a cannon, playing near a computer keyboard, and frolicking with workers. Staffers care for the and pay for her expenses. Bella spends the nights in the Alamo office.
Can we get a bell on that? Because you
it's fine. I stuttered.
He stuttered. It's a stutter bell. So the cat's there. It's the calico is the official cat of Texas.
Indeed, and you know, the official tax. Cat. Have a drink, folks, on me. Cat of the Alamo.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's cool. Calicos are cool.
I have a calico.
Yeah, calico's
Miss Cali Cali.
Cali Cali.
Multicolored destroyer of worlds.
Yeah, that's from Indiana Jones. Cali! Cali Ma!
My cat's name is Cali Cali, the multicolored destroyer of worlds.
No love for you, Dr. Jones! Roswell's unanswered UFO questions. Nathan, number four today. The hits keep coming. What do you think? Let's do this.
Woohoo!
Something crashed near Roswell. Oh, absolutely. New Mexico, 68 years ago, Nate.
Really?
Yeah, the first military-authorized press release stated, RAAF, Roswell Army Airfield, captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. That's right, the military was the first to indicate it was a flying saucer. And it shows a picture of the actual news release there. Then they quickly said that was a mistake. It was just a weather balloon. We've heard about this one.
You know, are you saying the military makes mistakes? I don't believe it.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. It was just a weather balloon, but UFO researchers were never... No, that's what they said. It was just a weather balloon. But UFO researchers were never satisfied with that answer. Even decades later, and the controversy only grew from there, the military later revealed that this wasn't a simple weather balloon, but an aircraft used for clandestine purposes. Drink up,
clandestine.
Guys. Okay, clandestine. Drink, guys, yeah. Twice. Part of the Army's top secret project, Mogul. It's Mogul.
Mogul?
That's M-O-G-U-L. Mogul. Drink up because you interrupted. To the monitor. You interrupted with stupidity. Drink twice.
Well, I'm not reading the article. What's a Mogul?
I don't know. Isn't that a...
Well, that drink up from Sean's stupidity.
Isn't that a gremlin before it drinks water?
That's a Mogwai.
Oh, it's Mogwai. Anyway, to monitor atomic weapon testing in the old Soviet Union, the military also claimed that the crash test dummies may have been mistaken for ETs, but the explanation only stirred the controversy even more. The central figure surrounding the events of the 1947 Roswell UFO issue was Major Jesse Marcel, which we've been talking to his daughter, trying to get her on the show, and she's coming up in the future, guys. The intelligence officer for the 509th Bomb Group at Roswell Army Field, he was assigned to the initial task of going out to the debris field to collect some of the material described as shiny wreckage, including pieces of rubber, super-resistant tinfoil, wooden sticks, and metallic-looking I-beams. Yeah. Here's some of his statement. We went out to the scene where the crash was and started picking up the debris. It almost, it was almost indescribable. It's not the kind of material I'd ever seen in my life, nor have I seen it since. There was various types of materials, which I couldn't identify. There were little members that looked like they were made of wood, but it wasn't wood, and it had some kind of writing in hieroglyphics that I couldn't decipher, and nobody else could. It was flexible, but you couldn't break it, and you couldn't burn it. You remember these reports? Remember the picture with the...
I seem to recall something about that.
Anyway, to mark the crash anniversary, Michael Donovan of OuterPlaces.com joined us on the Huffington Post Weird News podcast to discuss Roswell's unanswered questions. 2 years ago, Donovan was standing in the Roswell crash debris field, sorry about that, drink up, guys, along with Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., a highly decorated military flight surgeon. It was a moving experience because we're out on the site and this large thunderstorm was moving towards us. You can see the lightning flash, and he's standing there with his Iraq war veteran hat on and said, "This is amazing. 66 years ago, my father was standing on this very site." His father had loaded debris into his car, drove back to the Roswell, where he stopped at his house and showed his young son and family, of course, what he had found, which they swear was from a UFO. Indescribable. Anyway, guys, this weekend was the 20th Roswell UFO Festival. It took off with a full blast today with speakers giving their presentations at different locations simultaneously. Oh, my God. I'm drinking too much beer. If lectures don't fit your fancy, there's always the alien pet and alien costume contest and a UFO festival light parade to check out. There you go.
Wasn't there some report that they found bodies there, Sean, and then they said they were crash test dummies?
That's what I just read. What are you doing over there?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if that was the report, how could somebody confuse a crash test dummy for a body?
I don't know.
Well, you know what? Let's go on to the next story. Rescue mission for lifeless body finds Papa Smurf balloon.
Okay. I'll do
this. Comes to us from the Huffington Post as well, folks, from last week. It from the 19th, June 19th, actually. Somebody really blew it.
Oh.
Smurf joke.
Smurf.
When a train passenger in Germany saw a dead, buried man in a blue coat and a red and red trousers near the railroad tracks Tuesday, everybody... Have a drink, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Last Tuesday evening, he immediately reported it to authorities.
Okay.
A helicopter crew soon spotted the prospective victim, and indeed, he was wearing blue pants, blue outerwear and a red cap.
Right.
And had a white beard, UPI News reports.
Okay.
However, the so-called lifeless body was actually a deflated Papa Smurf balloon, according to the Mirror. Members of the rescue crew said the balloon victim looked a little deflated, but he was otherwise fine, according to the press released, the police released that afternoon. Papa Smurf was taken to the nearest police station, but all attempts to reach his relatives have failed, according to the release.
Gargamel got him, finally.
Yes. Although rescuing a balloon seems ridiculous, officers deemed the effort a success.
Right.
The emergency call witness was completely justified, police said, according to the local news. Under the different conditions, he could have saved a life.
Oh, man. He should be commended.
There you go.
You know what, Nathan? We are at 7:54, sir. And do you know what that means?
It means I got to find the next page in here, Sean.
You do. I'll give you a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's time for...
Legend X.
That's right. Legend X, guys, where each week, Nathan and myself scour the universe, or at least the planet, and we try to bring you the latest and greatest in legends to find out, is there any truth to them, or are they totally false? This week's Legend X is...
the Bill Whack Monster.
Billy Whack Monster drink.
You call it Billy Whack? Oh, yeah, I guess it would be Billy
Got
Whack.
An extra I, two L's.
There you go.
You botched
that. B-I-L-L-I-W-H-A-K or A-C-K.
B-I-I?
B-I-I? B-I-L-L-I-W-H-A-C-K. Monster. Billy Whack.
Billy Whack.
The Billy Whack.
Crack corn, and I don't
care.
Why
didn't you correct me earlier when I said it?
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
Hey, Sean, I'm reading here from the Demonical.
Oh.
Demonical.blogpost.com. The Billy Whack Monster.
The world's only.
You have to make your announcement first. Go ahead. Make your announcement.
The world's only devil worshiping magazine. Didn't I just make my announcement about Legend X?
Did you?
Yeah. You said. You started us off. You said, Legend X. And I said, we scour the nation to bring you the latest and greatest, yeah.
You did. We made too many mistakes during that news broadcast, and I drank a little too much. Here, let me take a sip of water.
Take a sip of water there. But the Billywhack Monster looks kind of freaky-deaky.
It's an interesting-looking monster there, Sean. We haven't covered the Billywhack before.
No, this is the first time. What'd you say? It kind of looks like the Star Wars...
You remember that opening scene in Empire Strikes Back Luke gets taken by the snow monster?
I do.
Reports of the Billywhack Monster are of a whitish-colored, whitish-grayish-colored beast with ram horns,
ram,
and claws.
Oof!
So that kind of sounds like the Billy. That kind of sounds like the snow beast to me.
Yeah.
Hey, let's see here. The Billywhack Monster is a large, hairy, Bigfoot-like monster, complete with claws and ram horns.
Oh.
And according to local legend, frequents the area of Santa Paula in Ventura County, California.
Okay.
The legends of the monster date back to World War II, and there have been reports, sightings, and even attacks, with one unfortunate victim claiming to have been viciously attacked by the unknown animal, leaving him badly scratched up.
Oh my God.
Other victims include a group of hikers in 1964 who claim they were stalked by the monster for several hours.
Oh, my God.
Of course, this is a legend of a large, hairy beast like Bigfoot, Sean. But like we said, ram horns. And according to legends, the Billywhack Dairy was once the site of a secret OSS or Nazi research lab where experiments in creating super soldiers were carried out.
Okay. Experiments.
Of course they attribute a lot of this to legend, Sean. Since there haven't been any reports since then, but there were about 43 monster-seeking children with shotguns. No, I'm kidding.
Children!
Some articles report that a woman who leased the land once held off the monster with a shotgun to protect her children. So she claims there were 43 of the monsters, actually.
That's
so
a mama's instinct.
43 monsters, she held them off with a shotgun to protect the children.
Tonight's Legend X, the Billywhack Monster.
The Billywhack Monster. I don't know, Sean. I don't know. What are you thinking? An OSS research lab in California?
A Furburger. I heard that said one time by an old man that was a mechanic, and I thought it might be a monster or something, but it's not.
It is a monster, Sean. It will swallow a man's soul.
It can be. Anyway, David Hunter, tonight's guest. Hey, guys, tonight's guest, he's an American actor and a writer that's brought thrills and chills to silver screen, or as he's known to most, from 2013, Leatherface. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre maniac himself stops by, Mr. Leatherface, Mr. Dan Yeager, in the house tonight. That's
dun,
right.
Dun, dun,
dun, dun. We did up a nice poster for Dan, everything.
Yep.
Special poster.
It's really nice. It's kind of cool.
It was. Kind of cool. Kind of smooth. Anyway, Demon Hunter, make sure to check your Skype messages that I sent you during your news segment there. And tonight, guys, each week we play an independent band that we love, we know, we sponsor. We always protect the little man on here. Anyway, name of the song, guys, is Dead Death Letter Blues. The name of the musician is Jeremy Wallace. Shadow Nation. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
It's me, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper, and you're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. Tonight's guest, he's an American actor and a writer that's brought thrills and chills to the silver screen. In 2013, he brought in a new era of leatherheads with his classic role as the chainsaw massacre maniac himself, Leatherface. Shadow Nation, please help us welcome to studio tonight, Mr. Dan Yeager. Dano, what's going on, brother?
Oh, not much. Just enjoying the holiday weekend here.
Happy,
how's it going?
Happy 4th of July, man.
Same to you.
Yeah, yeah. It was banging last night. We were talking about, had the kids out last night. We was doing the bottle rockets and lighting them up, man, celebrating it. What'd you do last night?
Yeah.
Did you like something?
Actually, my family lives here in Las Vegas.
Okay.
So I came up to visit them for the weekend. So we're just hanging out, having a relaxing time.
You're out in the desert, baby.
Yeah.
Hey, where are you from originally? You live up in like a mountain town somewhere, don't you?
I do. We're up in the central coast mountains of California now. I grew up in a little town called Columbia Station, Ohio.
Ah, you're right next to me. I'm an Indiana kid.
All right. Been to Indiana many times.
Oh, yeah, man. Columbia Station, Ohio. Now, there's a lot of...
You got to understand, Dan, if I tell somebody they're from Louisiana, Sean goes, oh, that's only 1,000 miles from me in uh-huh. Indiana.
I hear the cornfields. But, Dano, like I was saying, brother, I mean, you're doing a lot. You're doing the writing thing. You've done the acting thing. I want to know, and a lot of interviews I've heard, you know, that you've done, nobody seems to really touch base when you were a kiddo. I always ask the guys that come on, just like we had your buddy on last week, Paul Ray.
Yeah, Paul.
Kind of threw him off. When you were a tater tot growing up in Columbia Station, Ohio, did you ever think... You'd be wearing the mask, baby?
Does anybody really think they'll be wearing the mask? I doubt it. No. Actually, I'm sitting here with my brother, and he was the one who probably got me into this when we were just little, young kids. You know, we'd watch monster movies on TV all the time, and, you know, we'd build haunted houses in the basement because it's Ohio and it rains all summer long. And, you know, hell, I was probably, you know, 4 or 5 years old when, you know, he's a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
So he turned me on to all the cool stuff. There was all sorts of good stuff in Cleveland. Columbia Station is about 20 miles south and 40 years behind Cleveland.
Right. Hey, what?
We used to get all their TV.
Who was your horror host?
Pardon?
Who was your horror host? I know you had one out there.
We had, there were actually three weekly shows that we used to watch. One was The Ghoul, who took over from Goulardi.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a duo. When I was a kid, it was Houlihan and Big Chuck.
Yeah.
And they, you know, I forget which one was on Friday, which one was on Saturday. Anyway, and then on Saturday afternoon, there was this weird little guy, Superhost. And he was just this dumpy little guy who'd dress up in a Superman costume and show Japanese monster movies.
Yeah, Godzilla, you know, and stuff, the old ones.
Yeah, everything. So, I mean, that was a lot of my childhood.
So you grew up on the classic 70s slashers, then?
Yeah, well, actually, probably more the 50s and 60s
right.
Stuff. Huh. I'm 50 years old. So.
Right. You're 50 years young, baby. But, you know, like you said, does anybody ever think they'll be wearing the mask of Leatherface?
Yeah, no. I've told the story many times of when I first decided I wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
This was, I hate to think of how many years ago that was. It was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was here in Las Vegas. I went to high school here. And I met a guy named Robert Corey through some family friends, and he was the guy who played Count Yorga the Vampire.
Oh, okay.
I think that was 1970.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was really just a nice guy, and he was kind of tickled that I wanted to be an actor, because I was already big, you know. I mean, I was 20 years old, and he says, wow, you're so big. You should just move to Hollywood. He says, you'll make a living playing monsters.
Right.
I said, really? Yeah, all right. Well, maybe I'll do that. And You know, I'd run into him a couple of times in the subsequent years, and he kept asking me, so have you moved to Hollywood yet? No, I haven't done it yet, And finally, I, you know, made it to L.A., didn't really do much in acting. It's a nightmare to try and break into it. I could never deal with the poverty of it.
Yeah.
And anyway, you know, it was what, 25 years later, you know, I finally got the gumption to really do it.
Right.
And it wasn't until I was doing an interview like this, and I realized not only, you know, was he right, he was absolutely prophetic, because now, you know, I pretty much make a living playing monsters.
You know, one of the things, what was some of the jobs you had coming up like that? Because like you said before, it's a nightmare when you go out there.
Oh, yeah.
We had a little bit of a TV show, and we just seen a little bit of the nightmare and how fast things can get canceled and how you know, you never know when the next check's coming from. And I had a full-time job. I still do. And you had to go in between trying to go out and film and come back home. Being a star like you and being in the motion pictures, when you went out to California, what kind of jobs did you do to get peanut butter and, you know, bread?
Well, actually, you know, like I say, it's only been 5 years ago that I really decided to do this for serious. I only did amateur theater and, you know, just kind of dabbled in it for the intervening 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, your size.
I was 45 when I decided I wanted to be a movie star again, you know.
That's awesome. That is
so
awesome.
You know, I mean, I always made a great living. You know, I worked in architecture for, you know, most of those years, and then kind of ended up specializing in interior stuff, you know, and millwork,
yeah,
engineering and design. So,
well, considering your history in architecture and your engineering and your knowledge of monster movies, have you ever just thought about going around and building people's haunted houses for them since you just started that in your basement?
Yeah, you know, that would be fun. I've always wanted to build a haunt. I don't know if anybody would want to live in it.
I would.
It would be. I've always been fascinated by those.
You know, there's so many people out there that don't know the passion about the horror. I mean, I was a lonely kid. I grew up in a house with the old folks, and I remember getting out the Halloween decorations, and I would make the hallway into a haunted house.
Yeah.
And I would try to take mom through it and stuff like that. You said your passion for all things spooky got you into this type of deal. What other monsters did you play before Leatherface? I mean, like on stage or anything like that?
The only real monsters I ever did it was right before doing Leatherface. I was in a British pantomime in North Hollywood, and I played Herbert the Horrible Ogre.
Is that like Shrek?
And he was just, yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Except he's huge, you know. And fortunately, you know, I am big and everybody else in the cast was small, so it kind of came off. You know?
Yeah.
It was fun.
You've got that gimmick going for you. Like, we had Doug Jones on, and we kept calling him a contortionist.
Drink! You botched
that. Drink, folks. He was like, I'm not a contortionist. I just, you know, I'm thin and I can move, so people hire me to play monsters. Uh-huh. You know, it's and you've got that size going for you. If Sean and I showed up on a set and said we want to be monsters, they'd look at it and go, you look like everybody else. So, no.
Yeah.
It's
You get on his shoulders.
Yeah. And then Dan walks into the room, and all you see is a shadow blocking out the sun. Because Dan, did you play football or anything in school? Because you're gigantic, man.
Yeah, I dabbled in it. You know, I was I went to a vocational school for high school, and they didn't have, you know, they didn't have sports. I often credit that fact with why I wanted to be an actor. You know, by the time I graduated high school, I had all this, you know, pent-up need to show off. And, you know, that's really what kind of drove me to acting.
Right. I'm glad you said your pent-up need to show off, because when you were saying they had no sports or football or anything like that, I thought you were going to say, I had all this pent-up need to knock somebody down. And be-
yeah, no. There's plenty of that anytime.
You know, I love on your website, Dano, the www.danyeager.com, when you talk about when you first went to your screenwriting 101, your first class.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know, trying to get into something, how lonely that could feel, and you really break it down. Could you tell our listeners how your first day went when you went into class?
Start screaming. Yeah, I think I remember that story.
Let me read it to you.
I have a terrible memory, and it gets muddled. So if it's different from what I wrote, please excuse
me. That's all right.
It was an AFI class, American Film Institute. They put on some great stuff. I highly recommend it to anybody. I'm not sure if they're only in L.A. or they're all over the place, but yeah. I know they do it here. Anyway, I took one of their writing classes, and it was Screenwriting 101. Went into the class, and there were supposed to be 30 students. And I think 36 or 38 people showed up. Yeah. And the instructor said, I'll break it down for you. He says, this is how it's going to go. You know, there's 30 however many of you in here right now. Next week, half of you aren't going to show up.
Right.
And then he said, you know, and then it's going to get smaller and smaller every week, you know. And then by the end of the course, he says, all right, raise your hands if you think you're going to turn in the final assignment. And, of course, everybody in the room raised their hands. And, you know, that was all I needed to hear. And he says, the reality is only one of you is going to turn in the final assignment.
Yeah.
Out of 38 people, everybody was going to drop out except one person. He says, and it happens every time. And so and after he told us, he says, so how many of you think you're going to turn in the final assignment? And most of us had our hands up.
Right.
But by the time we got to the end of that class, one other girl in the class turned in her final assignment besides me.
Wow.
Wow.
And, you know, it's tough. It's gotten easier over the years. I just banged out a script in, like, I don't know, 3.5 weeks.
Was that for the Gospel of Joy? Is that a new one, or?
Yeah, this is a new one.
Okay.
For a feature. And actually, I think it's going to be the first one that ends up getting made because it's the lowest budget. I wrote them in kind of in reverse order. You know, I wrote the most expensive one first. It's actually very hard to write. You know, it's easy to make it interesting if you try and spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, stuff. Anyway, this new one. I think it may be the most suitable, you know, follow-up to my work in Texas Chainsaw.
Right.
You know, this one really is. The other ones are kind of, you know, a lot of zombies and, you know, stuff like that. This one is just hardcore, you know.
Well, it seems to be the craze right now. But you know, the zombie thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you were talking about being an actor, living out where you're at right now in California. Do you constantly just watch the open? I mean, you have an agent and stuff, so they just call you up and say, "Hey, Dano, we got a job for you. You need to go down here and audition." Or what do you do now? Because you're
probably You know, actually, I've pulled back from a lot of that. It got to be too. It's not what I want to do.
Right.
You know, I mean, I have a commercial agent, and they're really great. You know, they were sending me out on a lot of auditions.
Yeah.
But I really hate that part of the business. And so I decided, you know, hell, the only good roles I get are people who, you know, call me up and say, "Hey, would you do my movie?" Like, you know.
Dan, you're not going to be in Sharknado 3?
I haven't gotten that call.
If the price is right, baby.
Hey, I was talking to Richard Dreyfuss a few weeks ago, and we were sitting there talking about Jaws, and he had done the movie Piranha 3D, and I asked him if he had only done that movie so he could kill off his character, Hooper, from Jaws, and he said, no, I did it for the money. Yeah. You know, that's what it is. It's a job.
Yeah.
You know, but it's interesting what you were saying about the writing, because I live up here in Connecticut, and I live, just a few miles away from Rod Sterling used to have his writing school.
Uh-huh.
And he, there's quotes from Rod Sterling everywhere you look around here. And one of my favorite quotes of his is, everybody has an idea for a great movie or TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has an idea. The idea is the easy part. Yep. Turning it into a story is when it gets hard. So don't send me your ideas.
and ideas are free. You can't copyright an idea.
Yep.
And that's what sucks.
He used to say all the time, I'd do a show and somebody would say, I'd get a letter 2 weeks later from somebody saying, you stole that idea from me. I sent you that idea. So that's why nobody even bothers to look at other people's ideas anymore.
Yeah.
Unrealized ideas.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Anyway, I want to talk about your writing career some more. The Gospel of George, Brains, things like that. What are we going to do with those? Because, you've been working on those. After Chainsaw Massacre, you got back into the writing deal. I think the first one was The Gospel of George. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, that's actually a short. And it's one I had been working on. I finally got the script done. And it's 8.5 pages long, and I think it took me 9 years to write it.
Wow.
And it wasn't, I would go and just throw the whole thing away and start over, write it again, and I couldn't figure it out. And then finally, actually it was about, it's over a year ago now, that it finally came to me how to tell this simple little story. It's based on a true story. When I was in the cabinet, engineering business, I went to this little coffee shop, and this little old man came in, and they hadn't seen him. He was a regular, and they hadn't seen him, and he's old, and so they were worried, that he was no longer with us. And so anyway, when he showed up, they were very thrilled to see him. And he sat down and he told this story about how his cat had gotten hit by a car.
Oh.
And so he had to bury the cat, and he was so depressed that he just went to bed and he laid down, and when he woke up, his cat was sitting on the bed.
It's a pet cemetery, baby.
And so, I wrote this little script of how that, actually happened. And,
wasn't that like a scene from I Remember Mama or something? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, so what happened to the cat? I mean, did it make it? Did you ever see it again?
In my version, that's the question that the movie asks.
Right.
And I don't beat anybody over the head with what I think it is.
Right.
I wanted to create a story that lets people think about that. It enters questions of faith and belief and. It's meant to be very personal to people who eventually see it.
Right.
Faith and belief are such strong elements to everybody, because everybody's got a different one. When you're out there and you're writing these things, do you have any beliefs in like the supernatural that lead you on to these stories, or is it all like the what if method?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot lately, actually. There's a lot of debate in the country now about religion and everything. And I'm not sure exactly where I stand. I believe in ghosts.
Right.
I think we have a ghost at our house. Actually, I think we have a couple now.
Oh, my God. There we go.
And, all right, I'll tell you the ghost story real quick. When we bought this house up in the mountains, in the whole escrow process, some little repair things were found in the house, and so the seller was going to take care of them. And so his agent called up this handyman guy, yeah, and told him to go fix these few little things on the house. Well, he's an older guy who lived down in the flatlands, and he drove up to fix some dry rot on the siding. You know, it's a wood-sided house.
Yeah.
And when he got up there, the house is up at 5,000 feet. And so when he got up there, he realized he couldn't breathe.
He forgot his oxygen tank.
he had pneumonia.
Oh.
And so he was in the process of getting his tools out of his truck, and all of a sudden, you know, it really hit him, and he knew he was in trouble. And so he started to drive back down the mountain, and they found him dead in his truck.
Oh.
Ooh.
And I swear, he's still at the house trying to fix that dry rot.
Now, you know, have it fixed? Oh my gosh.
No, it was never fixed. And so anyway, it was about probably two weeks after we had moved in, there's a knock at the door. And it was this other handyman who said, "I'm here to fix that piece of siding that was supposed to be fixed in escrow." I said, "No, I think everything was done." He said, no, it wasn't done. And he told me the story of how the guy came up there to do it and died. So,
wow.
Anyway, Mr. Martinez was his name.
And what did he say?
There's your next story.
Yeah. See, Dano, that's what we do on this show. When we started it, you know, everything from when we grew up in Nathan's late 60s and me 70s, the horror genre. And what got us into this was the paranormal. So one week we'll have somebody that got abducted by aliens, somebody that deals with demons or ghosts. And then we'll have, you know, great people like you on that have starred in epic shows like, you know, The Chainsaw and portrayed Leatherface. So I think you're the first celeb we've had on. Well, mm-hmm. Elvira came on, Cassandra Peterson.
Yeah.
She had a ghost story too. But I think you're one of the only that's actually had a ghost story, because I think most of them are scared to admit they believe one way or the other.
Oh, yeah. No, what do I have to be afraid of?
Well, the funny thing with Elvira is she came on, we did the whole show, and afterwards she said, "Oh, I forgot to tell you the ghost story." So we had to have her back on the show to tell the ghost story.
So that's your mom and dad's house, or is that the house you live in L.A.?
That's the house I live in. Well, it's up, like I say, it's up in the mountains in California.
So are we talking footsteps in the night, whispers in the dark, stuff like that?
Actually, before I heard the story of the Mr. Martinez, the first night we were sleeping in the house, you know, we had just moved our stuff in and everything was in chaos.
Yeah.
And we just had the bed on the floor. We didn't even have the bed frame yet. And it was warm. It was August. And we were sound asleep. And I woke up because somebody hit me on the foot. I hang off the end of the bed, you know.
Right.
And I looked over, and the dogs are both sound asleep, and my wife was sound asleep. I thought she, you know, heard something and was trying to wake me up. And, you know, it was just hit on the foot. And I've had that happen a couple of times since. He just hits me on the foot. And
we'll be glad it's not with his hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No, he's just, you know, he's not, I don't think he's malicious.
Right.
You know, he's not one of those. He's there, though. Yeah, my wife hears him a lot, too. You constantly hear knocking on the one wall where the siding was. You hear the knocking. He's constantly working on it.
Oh, wow. I would think your wife, when you go out to work and she's home alone, my wife would go insane. I tell her all the time, I want a haunted house, but not like a demon haunted house, just a friendly ghost. She said, "Are you nuts?"
Yeah, he is. He's cool. He is a little mischievous. You know, my wife has this little stone. I'm not sure if it's onyx or what it is. It's this little stone that sits in a little brass holder, and it's shaped like an egg. You know, it's just a little decorative thing.
Right.
And he knocked that off the table one time, and it rolled across the floor. Scared the hell out of her.
Oh my God! Yeah, that would do it. Hey, about UFOs. Being from Columbia Station, Ohio, and knowing that Indiana, Ohio is just littered with UFO reports. What's your experience? Oh, yeah. Have you ever had any of those UFO encounters?
No, you know, not for lack of looking. I'm always looking. And I'm thoroughly convinced that it is mathematically impossible that not only are we not alone in the universe, they're here. You know, there's no way we would have escaped attention, you know, at this point. You know, it's mathematically impossible for it not to be true.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, they keep finding more and more planets. It used to be we didn't really know because nobody had any idea of how many planets there actually were. Turns out planets are the rule rather than the exception. And, you know, life-supporting planets seem to be fairly common. Even in our own solar system, they're finding that, you know, oh, yeah, the moons of Jupiter probably, you know, have some life forms on them.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because we have Stanton Friedman on every now and then, who's a nuclear physicist, who's basically the guy who shows up at everything from UFO conferences to, you know, Senate committees and says, these are the facts, okay? Let's forget people's reports and eyewitnesses. This is the mathematical equations that says we're not alone. So it's
And in not being, you know, alone, you know, they've got to be out there. There's, like I said, there's just no way we ever would have escaped their attention. I'm sure we're surrounded by some kind of a cloak that keeps us from seeing everything that goes on. You know, they're jamming the signals for us.
I keep telling Stanton, we're not being watched. We're under quarantine.
They're waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So do you think disclosure by our government is at hand, like some of our past guests, Nick Pope, Stanton Friedman, stuff like that?
NASA's talking about it a lot. So I think that's how they're going to ease us into that. You know, they need to get us comfortable with the idea before they spring it on us. Because it is going to freak a lot of people out. You know, it's going to be an interesting point in human civilization when we have to face up to the fact that, you know, we've been very, very arrogant.
Oh yeah.
Our opinions of ourselves.
When they pick you, Dano, to go up to the spaceship and be the first human to greet the aliens, please don't wear the leather face and the chainsaw and everything.
Yeah.
How you guys doing?
I'll come up with something.
Speaking of what you wear, hey Dano, what's up with bad anger?
Bad anger started out actually in really getting into the whole Texas Chainsaw thing and studying it and trying to figure it out. I came to wonder, why in the hell do we like to be scared?
Yeah.
You know, what people have, you know, been telling ghost stories around the campfire for, you know, eons. It's just something we like, and I could never figure out really why we take pleasure in that. And so, you know, I really started to study the whole, the dark side, and you know the things that I kept finding were, I don't know, it's just an interesting aesthetic.
It's crazy.
And I was on set. We were shooting the carnival scene, and we had a bunch of extras. And of course, they had this gag rule: you couldn't have a cell phone.
Right.
You know, nobody could take any pictures. They didn't want any pictures of Leatherface, you know, leaking out. And they actually succeeded in preventing anyone from leaking a picture of Leatherface before the movie came out.
That's rare.
And so for that carnival scene, we had like 150 extras, and most of them were working for free. And so, you know, and all of them wanted to talk to Leatherface. And so I spent a lot of time talking to everybody. It was just constant. But anyway, there's this one woman who had brought her entire family. She had like three kids and her mother.
Oh.
And she came and she really wanted, you know, kind of a picture with me, and I said, well, you know, I can't do it when I'm wearing any of the wardrobe, but, you know, when we wrap, come over to the trailer. You know, I told her where it was. And I said, we'll take pictures. That's fine. And so she brought her whole family, and she had this one son, and he was just a really interesting kid. There was something about him. He really didn't, you know, he wasn't really too much into it, but
right.
But I found the kid fascinating. And so I talked to him for a bit, you know, and I said, so, you know, what do you like to do? He says, I like to play drums. I'm into, you know, metal. I said, oh, that's cool, you know. We talked about that a little bit. And he said, you know, he said, you know, I've had trouble in school. He says, I have bad anger. And, you know, and I could just hear some counselor, you know, telling this kid that, you know, he had bad anger issues. And I just, that phrase stuck with me. And I realized that bad anger, that's the thing that, you know, kind of motivates the really, you know, all of the horror stories, you know, is, you know, we all get angry. There's anger out there, but then there's the bad anger. And that's where it gets interesting.
And so you created a line of clothing? T-shirts?
So I adopted that as my, you know, kind of theme.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just started, kept designing stuff. Because I, you know, like I say, I've been, you know, spent most of my life drawing and designing and whatnot. And it's now evolved into Bad Anger Pictures. That's going to be our production company. That's what we're putting everything under.
I just love the fact that on your Bad Anger website for all your T-shirts and your coffee mugs and stuff, right in the middle is a picture of Mr. Rogers with a line that says, never forget.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Dan, I know we've kept you over. You're with family, brother. Just tell us something about some of the charities you've been working on. That's great, man.
Oh, well, you know, pretty much anything to do with you know, animals and kids, it seems. Those are the ones I tend to get reached out to from, if that's even a sentence.
Yeah. It works on here, you know, baby.
You know, the Paws LA and you know, the Kit Crusaders, mostly animal charities though. That's my main thing. I remember a quote from Elbert Hubbard, one of my favorite authors. He said, we must speak for our dumb brothers, for the animals. They have no voice, so
right.
You know. And that's Leatherface. You know, yeah. he has no voice. He lets his chainsaw do the talking.
Well, I do want to say to the people who are listening, if you haven't gotten the chance to go over the Dan Yeager, is it Yeager? I've been saying Yeager all night. I want to make sure
Yeager.
I'm saying right. Yeager. Yeah. See, Sean, I got it right.
Yeagermeister.
If you haven't had the chance to go over to danyeager.com, that's danyeager.com, go over there, because I just found fascinating going onto like one of the pages and seeing you sitting there in your hat, smoking your cigar, and you don't think this man is Leatherface. And then you go over to the photos, of course, and you see what's going on. But, dude, I just got to say, I'm loving everything about what you're doing. And
well, thank you very much.
It's been fabulous to have you here.
Yeah, and you know, as soon as we get we're in the process of kind of putting some stuff out there to develop these movies. I don't know if we're going to do a Kickstarter or anything on them, but you know, we'll have links to all that stuff on the website so people can find it if they are so inclined.
Well, you know, Dan, anytime you get that stuff out there and you're ready to announce it, let us know. We will plaster it. Plus, come on, even if you can only come on for
absolutely.
A few minutes and say, hey, this is me, and we're doing this, and be sure to check us out, and thanks to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show, we'll play it every week for you.
That's it. We will.
Well, I certainly appreciate that.
Well, I tell you what, Daniel, we love you, man. You're an amazing man. You're an amazing actor, and we stand behind you. And I tell you what, we're going to ask you to stay on the line 1 second while we close out the show. But where do we go from here? Where does Dan go?
Like I say, I'm focused on writing and directing. I mean, that's my next thing. Although, you know, I've still got a couple of movies. My buddy Brett Wagner is developing what I think is going to be a pretty cool project. Hoping we'll have something to talk about that in the next few weeks anyway. You know, all sorts of things coming up, so.
Well, be sure and shoot us over the info on that. We'll let everybody know what it is when you're ready to announce it.
Absolutely, I will.
All right, Nathan, what do you say we close out the show?
Oh, well, normally this would be very hard for me, but it is the start of Shark Week, so I am looking forward to going and watching Shark Week tonight.
I could talk to Dan all night. Dano, we love you, brother. Stay on the line 1 second.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You bet.
Let's do it, brother.
Yeager, Leatherface himself. Make sure to check him out, danyeager.com. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you guys listening? Because they want to know, so check them out at actionaudioapps.com. Midnight Syndicate, Free Music Archives, Creative Commons. Thanks for the tunes. From the haunted back roads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.